All right, everyone. On today's episode, we are just going to dedicate the whole show to an obituary for the death of Golden Boy. Welcome to the Ultimate Crowdsourced Personal Finance Show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, serious, not serious, guys. Welcome back to the show. Brad, Golden Boy, 18 years. 18 years! And it is finally gone. I'm sorry, man. How are you feeling right now?
Yeah, I'm... actually a sad moment, I have to say. Like, I have had that car. So to catch everybody up who is maybe new listeners, Golden Boy is the affectionate name that Jonathan has for my 2003 Honda Civic.
The car wasn't even gold. Like, maybe a little bit of rust, maybe a little iron red. Yeah.
Good bit of rust. It was a black Honda Civic that maybe needed a paint job at this point. But I mean, Jonathan, honestly, as sad as this sounds, like, that was part of my FI identity for a long time. It really was. Like, I felt odd, like, actually getting a new used car. Like, you know, obviously I didn't go in and buy a brand new car, but even still, like, it's kind of weird. It really, really is. So it's a sad moment.
Well, you say obviously. I don't know if it's not necessarily so obviously. You bought Golden Boy back in the day, didn't you?
I did. And no, you're right. That is, when the word came out of my mouth, I wish that I could have taken it back. But to your point, and using the example that we've said a number of times, right? The true cost of car ownership way back in the day. What episode was that?
Oh, 22. It's one of those that's locked. You give me a credit for all of them. I think it's actually only about 22 episodes that I have totally locked. Fortunately, we reference them often.
That is very, very true. So in that example, we talk about buying a brand new car every 15 years. And over a 45-year kind of adult lifetime, if you will, that amounts to almost $750,000 difference over someone who is just leasing a car or managing the payments, as they say. So yeah, clearly I should not have used the word obviously, because we did consider getting a new car. I mean, life changes, right? Like, there are different seasons of life. And I mean, frankly, my older daughter, Anna, is going to have her driver's permit in the not too distant future.
She was probably hoping she would get to drive Golden Boy. No,
I promise she really was not. No, my family was actually the reason Golden Boy was not operating extraordinarily well.
Was not loved by all. Towards the end.
Is not loved by all. No, to put it mildly. So yeah, nobody was looking forward to even being in Golden Boy.
Tell us what happened. I mean, let's talk this through, because you've been kind of coaxing this thing along. We reported that, you know, it was having some trouble last year, and you worked through it. You got it repaired. So what ended up finally being that last straw?
Yeah. And I guess this is kind of what's maybe applicable to the audience, as opposed to just kind of chuckling at me here, which is, you have to make some determination when it comes to an older car of when enough is enough. And sometimes it's not just the monetary considerations, right? Like, I had looked at this and said, I really, really want to just keep fixing this thing, because it was small little items. And I did put a decent bit of money into it in the last couple of years, and it seemingly had been fixed.
I think your mechanic told you the entire inside was new. Like, all the parts are new now, Brad. You have a brand new Honda Civic wrapped in an 18-year-old container, paid for, $200 at a time.
Yeah, it did kind of feel like death by a thousand cuts. And you know, I, on some level, was okay with that, because even if it was just once or twice a year, that's still dramatically less than having a car payment every month, right? So it was a reliable car. It only had 125,000 miles on it, which for a Honda Civic, albeit a 17 and a half year old one, that's still a baby in the grand scheme of things, 125,000 miles. So I thought that there was a chance. But like I said, it's not just monetary. And I think this is where the intersection of psychology comes in with FI in general. It ultimately got to the point where my family just was not comfortable being in Golden Boy anymore. So, I mean, that was the end. It got to the point where my younger daughter was literally having like anxiety that the car was going to break down. And that's a deprivation lifestyle, right? Like, and that's what we advise strongly against, is just being a miser, right? And holding on to, oh, I don't want to get a new car, or I don't want to get a new used car. Like, I'm going to run this thing into the ground. But I mean, frankly, the psychological impact on my child, like, it's not worth it.
You know, Brad, I think what you just said there is actually probably a huge relief to maybe spouses in a relationship with a partner saying, well, Brad's been driving his car for 18 years and he's going to go on 25. We're not selling the car. Like, we're never getting rid of the car. And I just wanted to point out, like, maybe for your spouse, like, it's an open-ended conversation, right? This is a balancing act. Like, there's not a prize for who can drive the car for 100 years at any cost. It's your life choices. And there's a balance to all of this. But clearly, you don't want to tilt so far the other way that you're just okay having payments forever, because that will rob you of your wealth. That'll rob you of your time and keep you from having the options later to be able to do with your time what you want.
Jonathan, we talk about this all the time, right? Like, the nuts and bolts of money, that's pretty simple once you have a basic handle on it. But it's the psychology of traveling this path to FI and, you know, the not giving in to instant gratification and all these other things we talk about. Like, it's hard to get off the standard path, but those of us that have chosen this path to FI, like, we understand this is a mental game. And like you talk about, Jonathan, it's not always straight, right? Like, you talk about kind of you still being that reluctant frugalist, right?
Oh, very reluctant. Yeah, always reluctant. And you know what, Brad, I just want to point out for the audience that this is not you failing or in some way not living up to your expectations for yourself. You had a brand new car that you drove for over 15 years. You wanted it to be 45. You were thinking, I'm going to get this Civic to a million miles. And, you know, life factors, family factors, pressure from your children and spouse got you to change the plan just slightly. But even in the meantime, yes, you only made it 18 years in this one vehicle. In that interim, in that 18-year period of time, you made it to financial independence. Like, the one choice that you made back in 2003, I'm going to buy a new car. And the choices that came out of that, I'm going to drive this car as long as possible instead of just managing the payments. The space that you were able to create by not having those payments over a period of 18 years, if you were to do the math on this, I mean, you look at compounding returns over a period of 20 years, not having that payments for over 15 years, you're probably looking at an additional, just even in the short window, $200,000 to $300,000 that you have in your net worth because of this decision. And I guess, and guaranteed over a 45-year period of time, it's probably north of $1 million decision to follow this path, even if now you were to go double down and buy the new car. And I guess that's my next question for you. You made it to financial independence. Did you go get the Tesla? Like, what are you driving now?
I did not get a Tesla, but I wound up getting a 10-year newer Honda Civic.
Ooh.
Actually. So I got a 2013 Honda Civic. It's sitting right outside. I'm looking at it right now. And yeah, it's a beautiful inside and out, gray color. It's it's actually gray.
Ooh.
So it's really, really a nice car. And I actually use Carvana, I don't know how they pronounce it, but the car that talks about like having those vending machines where they deliver the car to you and whatnot. And I have to say, it was really a wonderful experience. It was like incredibly, incredibly easy. I had done a whole bunch of research because I had a sense that this was coming. So I've been looking into options for the last month or so. And, you know, we have CarMax here that's actually headquartered here in Richmond. So a lot of people use CarMax. We've used them for prior cars. And I found that the Civics were maybe about $3,000 more comparable Civics at CarMax than Carvana when I started looking at Carvana. So that was kind of a no-brainer to go with them. And I did consider, and you know, Jonathan, I haven't looked for a car in my entire adult lifetime other than just that the one Golden Boy. So I did consider buying off Craigslist, and I didn't know enough about the buying process, and I probably should have educated myself a little bit more, but it just seemed like a little bit odd and uncertain, I guess. You never know exactly what you're getting, like, especially, frankly, in the times of COVID, like, do you take the car to a mechanic? Do you test drive it for it? Like, I know this is such a silly reason not to go down the path of something, but, you know, we talk about the psychological impacts. Like, these were the things that I was considering. So I did wind up going through Carvana. I spent 30 minutes at their site, bought the car, The car was delivered to my house this past Sunday. It was a 10-minute process, no joke, all in under an hour dealing with Carvana, including all of signing the documents, paying for the car, uploading my license and insurance info so they knew that it was, you know, I had all my ducks in a row. Like, it was really a very good experience. So yeah, clearly not a commercial for Carvana in any way, shape or form, but I did have a really positive experience.
Hey, Carvana, you can tweet at us though. It's totally cool. Hey, Carvana, find a vending machine near you. all right. Well, one little thing I noticed there, you said you got a 10-year newer version of the Honda Civic a la 2013, but that means that it's also 7 years old. And that's interesting because when I was doing a lot of the math on like the depreciation curve, it seemed like right around 5 years and beyond is kind of that sweet spot, you know? And so then it's, as soon as you drive it off a lot, it just goes straight down. There's no way you're going to be able to sell it for close to what you got it. And then that curve is pretty steep. The first couple of years starts to taper off. And basically the car will never drop below $1,000. You know, your 1998 Ford Expedition is worth $1,500 in steel alone. So that's the floor at what a car is worth. You can get it running or not running. But with that in mind, have you ever like seen a car that's really, and this to our audience more than you, Brad, I know you don't actually notice cars. You're going to be a Honda Civic driver for life. You've had five Bulldogs, all named Steve. But has anybody else just driven by and seen a really cool car and said, that car's amazing. I'll see you in 5 years. That's kind of been my mentality whenever I've like had my eyes on cars. I'm like, man, they really nailed it with this model. I can't wait to pick one up 5 years from now. I don't know anybody. If you feel the same way, let us know. Tweet at us. Let us know if that rings true. But it is something to be said for. If you're going to buy new, just buy it forever. If you're going to buy used, probably that 5 to 7 years is going to be a kind of a sweet spot. If you can get a low mileage car with one owner from a reputable source, that's going to look like winning. So some combination of those two. All right, guys, that was the long bit on cars. Listen to episode 22 for more context on the true cost of car ownership. It will be worth your time. And today, what we're actually going to do is I think we're going to change gears a little bit. We're going to talk about HELOCs. But before we do, we'll be right back. HELOCs. What does a HELOC stand for? MK, welcome to the show. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you. Glad to be here. So we had one of our listeners, Oscar, wrote in a while back, and he was asking about HELOCs. So he said, have you guys covered the topic of HELOCs? I've been hearing about using these programs to pay off my house in a more efficient way. So I know we've had people on the show previously mention that they had a HELOC, they used a HELOC for something. It's definitely a very clever acronym that kind of turns into a fun word, but it stands for Home Equity Line of Credit. And I'll let you guys talk about your experiences with them, what you know people have done with them, and kind of what this specific strategy is that Oscar's referring to.
Yes, there is a glaring gap in our content, and that is with regards to HELOC. So MK, thank you so much for defining it. HELOC, Home Equity Line of Credit. Brad, we'll talk about this advanced tactic and whether or not it's FI or not in just a second. But before we do that, let's talk about the purpose. Why would someone want a home equity line of credit? And is this something that you personally use?
All right. So yeah, home equity line of credit, as it suggests, this is talking about the equity in your home, right? So just at a very, very basic level, let's say your house, the market value is $300,000 for it. And your current mortgage, you've paid down your mortgage, you put a down payment on it, et cetera. And let's say your mortgage is, just for argument's sake, it's $100,000, okay? So the difference between the $300,000 market value and the $100,000 that you owe on it, that $200,000, that's the equity that you have in your home, right? So at the basic level, you don't have $300,000 worth of equity just because, oh, my house is worth $300,000. Well, no, you owe $100,000 on it. So the net is what you actually own. That's the portion that's your net worth, is that equity. So where this home equity line of credit comes in is, in general terms, that $200,000 in this example, you can't tap that in any way, right? It's just kind of sitting there in your house, if you will. There's no way to get that actual cash other than by, in normal terms, selling the house. But since most of us actually live in our house and don't want to sell it just to tap some of that equity, there are very, very few options. So Jonathan, that's where this HELOC comes in.
You know, it's interesting, Brad, as you were saying that, the light bulb for me even went off just a little bit. So, I was aware that, you know, we're talking about home equity. So again, to your point, you have a $300,000 house that you owe $100,000 on. So you have $200,000 of home equity And in normal terms, it's just kind of all locked into this theoretical benefit, net worth statement. You know, you look at it on a piece of paper, that's it. You can't really access it. That's all it is. And it's also worth pointing out that potentially your home's value is increasing year over year, maybe, hopefully for some of us, some years, maybe just slightly beating out inflation, getting 5% a year. That's for some of us. And you could see how maybe your home is worth, you know, 350 or 370 at some point. And now your equity is increasing even more, but it doesn't benefit you unless you were to, you know, sell your home for that appreciated price in normal terms. Well, home equity line of credit says, what if you could access that kind of on an on-demand basis and you could use it for anything that you wanted to use it for? So it seems to me, Brad, the next layer of this is that because we could get money from a bunch of different places. Like, why would we want to do this over maybe just borrowing money on our credit card?
Yeah, I mean, I guess at the most basic level is the interest rate. So an interest rate on a credit card, as we know, can be well upwards of 15%, 20 to 30% you see on many credit cards. So, I mean, that is a really significant interest that you're paying. And that's going to compound real quickly in the worst possible way. So ideally, you want to avoid credit card balances as much as humanly possible. So a HELOC is basically this revolving credit line that you can, like you said, you can tap into that equity at any point. And there is, in general terms, a variable interest rate on these HELOCs, but they're much, much lower. They're really akin to a mortgage interest rate. We've seen them in the 3, 4, 5% range, you know, depending on a bunch of factors. And obviously, we don't know specifically what interest rate you're going to get. But I would be really shocked if it was outside, if most of them were outside that 3 to 5% range right now. But again, it is variable. So whereas with a fixed rate mortgage that you've locked in for 15, 20, 30 years, you know that when you sign that contract, that interest rate you're paying on your traditional mortgage, that's locked in. Whereas this HELOC, there is that little bit of uncertainty, but clearly you're so far ahead of the game on a credit card, to your question, Jonathan.
Yeah, so that's kind of the key to this thing in that with the credit card, you're talking about unsecured. There's nothing to back it up. If you don't pay it, yeah, they're going to send collections at you. Yeah, it's going to trash your credit. There's all sorts of consequences on your kind of financial score, but credit card debt is unsecured. It's bankruptible. There's really nothing behind it, which is why they charge you these higher interest rates. Whereas with this HELOC, it's secured by your home. If you don't pay this, it's going to cost you your place of shelter. And so because of that, you're able to get this lower interest rate. So now that poses for us this kind of interesting advantage for homeowners, specifically over maybe someone that's a renter. And don't worry, renters, we'll come back at the end here. So if you're renting, you're like, oh man, I knew we should have bought the house. We'll talk about that in a second. But for homeowners, you now have a revolving line of credit potentially. If you've been paying your mortgage down, if your home's appreciated, if you know you didn't borrow up to the hilt to get the absolute biggest house you could possibly afford with 0% down because they gave you this doctor loan where you were able to get this ability to hop in that $600,000, whatever. If you followed some best practices for the size of your home and you put a good down payment down and your home has appreciated over time and maybe you've made your payments or extra payments, you very likely have this equity there. And now it's just a strategic number of steps to see what would it look like for me to be able to access this on demand.
Yeah. And Jonathan, a key point kind of just came up in my head of, as you were talking there about basically what is the difference between a HELOC and what a lot of people have heard of, which is a home equity loan, because there are these two terms that you may have heard. So a home equity loan is basically like a second mortgage. You are taking out that amount. So let's say you get a $50,000 home equity loan to, I don't know, pay for an addition to your house or something. Like that $50,000 is then deposited into your bank account and you have a contractual agreement on what amounts to this second mortgage to pay that back. Now, obviously, you could pay it back at any point, but you start accruing interest on that immediately. Whereas the HELOC, and this is critically important, and Jonathan, this is what we're going to get into. I know Big Earn actually has some advanced strategies around HELOCs, which is a HELOC is just a credit line. It's giving you the ability at any point, if you have an emergency, right? Or if you need to tap this money for some reason, it's there. So it's almost like insurance in essence, that if you had some catastrophe, you can access this. But just by having the HELOC, this line of credit, that's the critical phrase here, this line of credit, you are not paying interest on this from the second you sign up for the HELOC. It's just that you have the ability to tap into this line of credit. So it's just giving you more options. Now, of course, just like anything, it's going to come with a fee, right? To actually apply for the HELOC. I have seen in the past, in my adult life, I've seen no closing cost HELOCs. And to me, that's like a no-brainer. And frankly, I'm kind of mad at myself that I didn't do that, because when you're given what Annie Duke would refer to as a free roll. And we have Annie Duke coming up on Monday, actually, which is really, really exciting here, Jonathan. But when you're given something positive for no downside whatsoever, you really should jump on it, because it's just giving you options. It wouldn't have meant that I would have tapped this HELOC and spent all my equity in Vegas, right? Like, no, it just gave me options. And I didn't jump on it. And frankly, I regret that.
Right. So this is your point. If you can do something now to have lines of credit set up, this is a totally different conversation than saying, go borrow as much as you can and go take out as much debt as you possibly can right now, because don't worry, the interest rate's good. It'd be ridiculous. You know, even if you don't need the debt, make sure you take out all the debt, you know, because the interest rate's great. Ludicrous. Lots of people do this. Don't do it. This is saying, wouldn't it be nice to have access to significant lines of credit at no cost to myself, if I were to ever need it or want it, right? That's a totally different frame. And that's what a HELOC, imagine on demand, you have access to, you know, a $100,000 line of credit, a $200,000 line of credit. At some point during your financial life, that will be beneficial, potentially. And if you don't, even better. But when you really need it, it's tough to get these, right? It's tough to get these lines of credit in the moment. Even if everything's going perfectly, it could be a multi-week process. You don't want to wait till you need it to start applying for this type of line of credit. You're not going to get as good of an interest rate. Get it in place now, and then that way it's just a button click if you do ever need it for a period of time. And the point here is, actually, you mentioned Earn. Let's set him up for this. Earn, famously and controversially, we're going to leave that one has talked about how he does not have an emergency fund. This is a very controversial position. See, I got better at it as I practiced. And even especially in this era of COVID, where we actually did have a black swan event. We were talking about, well, Earn, what if? Well, now we've actually had one. I promise you, Earn is not concerned about his status, his position on emergency funds, because he had a plan. It wasn't don't have a plan. It was have a plan, and my plan is good enough that I don't need an emergency fund. And if you actually look, and we'll have this linked up in the show notes, Brad, I think he leans pretty heavily on his net worth and access to various lines of credit.
Yeah, I think that is spot on. And yeah, to your point, he said he has zero emergency fund, right? Like you hear in most personal finance spheres, oh, have a 3-month, 6-month, 9-month, whatever it is, emergency fund. And when Earn came on our podcast and talked about having no emergency fund, I mean, this rocked us. I mean, not to be too extreme here, Jonathan, or hyperbolic, but it was very unusual to hear that, because it goes against everything you think in personal finance. But his point was not, I have no money, or I have no net worth, or I have no options, right? It wasn't, I spend everything and I have negative savings rate. It's quite the contrary. It's, I have a plan. And Jonathan, this goes to what you were just saying a minute ago of preparing in advance, right? You were talking about getting HELOC, and instead of doing this in the heat of the moment when you desperately need money, you prepare in advance, because then you can shop around, you can get better interest rate, you can pay lower closing costs, et cetera. So planning in advance is always smart. And yeah, so ultimately what Earn said was, there is an opportunity cost to having a 6-month emergency fund. So let's say, for argument's sake, your yearly spending is $60,000, and that would mean a 6-month emergency fund is $30,000, right? It's half of that year's worth of expenses. So what most people do with an emergency fund is keep it in the most liquid place possible, right? You have it in your checking account, or hopefully at least an online bank getting you whatever, 1% or thereabouts. But there is a significant opportunity cost, which is, what am I foregoing? That's what opportunity cost means. What am I foregoing what are all the other options? So in Earn's case, the other options would be probably many advanced different investing strategies, but at the very least, putting it into low-cost broad-based index funds, which maybe over a 30-year period, he would expect to earn, let's say, 8% annually, somewhere in that vicinity, right? 6, 7, 8%. That far surpasses the 1% roughly he's going to get on that money in an online bank, right? So that opportunity cost, what he's giving up, is 5, 6, 7% compounded every single year. So his argument is, that's a huge opportunity cost. Why would I do that when I can have other options? And what he said to us was, it was actually a thought experiment. Think about what would be a true emergency that I, Big Earn, and based on my financial situation, what would a true emergency look like that I would need to come up with cash, actual cash, in a very short order? What could I not cover with, in an emergency, a credit card? Or what could I not cover, very pertinently here, with a HELOC, right? I have these options. I could always draw down on this HELOC because I have home equity, right? I mean, he talked about a bunch of different, it was almost like layer upon layer, Jonathan, how he considered this backup plan after backup plan. And he had this all said. And I have to say, like, that was an extraordinarily compelling argument.
Yeah. And I think part of it is when you look at Big Earn's life, he does not have consumer debt, right? His expenses are pretty structured. And then his, at this point now, his net worth is really significant. But he was making the case even a lot earlier on in the journey, when you're making less income, this is something to consider, just because we got to get that snowball working for us. And if we're waiting until we have $30,000 before we start doing any actual investing, then it's going to take us a lot longer to get to that first 100K, right? So he's actually making a layer point today. What we just want to point out is the line of credit that he had access. Play this out. In the worst case scenario, global pandemic, whatever. You know, you lose your job and the market crashes 30%. That's never going to happen. Are you kidding me? In the worst possible case scenario.
Hashtag 2020.
Right? Hashtag March. Hashtag year that won't end. Hashtag best year ever. Yeah. So, you know, in this situation, you have the market collapses. You have a 30% drop in the market. You lose your job and you have a $0 emergency fund, but you have a multi-$100,000 net worth. Right at this point, because you were investing your money ahead of time. Maybe it was $200,000 or $300,000. Now it's dropped down to 160 or 170. Much of it is in retirement accounts because that's where you were leaning in initially. So instead of just going in panic and selling, or just saying, "Oh, it didn't work. I should have had the emergency fund," whatever. Working through kind of what Earn was talking about. Earn saying, "All right, well, what do I need to do? First of all, I don't need to pull all my money out of the market right now. I need to be able to have a plan for my life. There's no actual crisis here. I just need to be able to pay my monthly expenses." Let's say that your monthly expenses are $6,000 a month. Nothing happens in a vacuum. Let's see what's going on for this first month. So for the first month, you know, we're probably going to reel in our expenses a little bit, depending on kind of our financial status. We're going to kind of check the boxes and make sure that we have what we need. We're going to start looking for new work potentially, but it's a global pandemic. Maybe the market has contracted. That doesn't work. So probably we don't need to sell everything outright. So what we could do is we could cash flow our expenses on a credit card for the first month. If we wanted to, we could start getting ready to draw money out of the markets. But if the markets are still down and we didn't want to do that, we have access to a HELOC with $200,000 of credit. We don't need all $200,000. We need 1 month worth. So $6,000 maybe, or $5,000, et cetera. Keep in mind, we have all the money in our account, in our investment accounts. We just don't want to touch them because the markets are depressed right now. So we take out the first $6,000 and we got that at a 5% annual interest rate. Brad, what is the interest that we're going to now have to pay? We've added now this amount of interest each month to what our life actually costs to have that first month. And you can do that for me, and I'm going to keep doing this. Now it's the second month. Still nothing gets fixed. Now it's the third month. Nothing gets fixed. Now it's the fourth. For 6 months, everything sucks. Everything sucks. For 6 months, we've had to draw $6,000 a month out of this HELOC, but now the market's rebounding, and we were able to land a new job. And we're like, all right, we don't need to draw anything down. We're like, do we need to pay this off right away? Do we pay it down slowly? Do we draw it out of the accounts? It's an options game, but it's now looking at it through the lens of, we knew there was a chance this would happen. What do we want to do now? And in the meantime, Brad, how bad is our financial scenario? How much actual additional recurring cost to interest have we added, you know, 1 month in, 2 months in, 6 months in?
Yeah, so just doing kind of back of the envelope math here, $6,000, you said a 5% annual interest rate. So that's going to be $300 a year, or basically $25 a month for every $6,000 that you borrow. So clearly we're not advocating this, but like you're saying, this is an emergency, right? Like in this global pandemic, like it gives you options. So $25 a month to cover you in that scenario. So if you're doing that for 4 months, that's going to cost you essentially $100, right? Or if you do that for 4 straight months and you take out additional money, you're still not talking life-changing interest. Now, we don't love paying interest, Jonathan, in general, but again, this is not a normal scenario. So it gives you options. And I think that to me is the huge takeaway from this, is give yourself options and plan ahead in the good times, right? Because you don't know what's coming. But the hallmark of financial independence thinking is understanding that things are up and down. There are seasons in life. Life is lumpy, as we like to say, right? Like things happen. And when you plan ahead, you give yourself these different options to consider and you're not stuck, right? Because what's the worst case scenario, as we've described multiple times, is scrambling, right? You're getting to that scenario where I'm in deep trouble. I haven't planned. I don't have savings. Like you set up the nightmare scenario of, wow, my entire life is going to crumble after 30, 60, 90 days, as opposed to somebody like Earn here, who, sure, he doesn't have a traditional emergency fund, but by any measure, he is fine, right? Because he has numerous options. He has a net worth and he has credit cards. He has a HELOC. He can float this for X number of days. If you have money invested in the stock market, then you need to sell some of it. Maybe it'll take 2, 3, 4 business days to sell and transfer the money. But in the meantime, if you need, you have that emergency, that true emergency, you can float that on a credit card and then just pay off the credit card with that money that you sold. You can take it out of the HELOC and then just pay it off. Or, Jonathan, in your scenario, you could very intentionally, and this is a decision that each person is making. And we're not, again, we're not advocating any decisions. We're just giving you a thought process of how you would consider this. Like in your hypothetical, that person didn't want to sell at the bottom of the market or the sky is falling. I don't want to sell everything now. Maybe I make that intentional decision to say, okay, this is going to cost me $25 a month in interest. And I'm willing to move forward with that for a couple of months. That's a decision I'm making with eyes wide open, but I'm doing it from a place of strength where I know I could pay this off at any given moment. Not that I'm digging myself into debt. Clearly, under any circumstance, we want to avoid the digging yourself into debt, right?
Yeah, totally agreed. And the difference there between the HELOC and the credit card scenario becomes abundantly apparent in light of the amount of interest that we're talking about carrying month to month. In this extreme example, you have money in the accounts, you really don't want to draw on it because the market's down. You're making an intentional play. I'm going to wait this thing out. And I will pay it off if I have to at some test, like a year and a half from now, if it's really bad, I will just pay it off then. But I suspect that in a year and a half, I will have a job. The market will have bounced back in some capacity, or maybe I could hedge my bets and pull it at some predetermined metrics. If it hits that, you try to avoid getting emotional about this and you just kind of come up with your own idea. But let's just say $25 a month in interest is what you just shared with us. In your worst case scenario, so 6 months from now, things are still bad. You're only carrying $150 a month in interest. If this strategy were to not work for a year, just playing this out, you're carrying $300 a month in interest. Your life became $300 a month more expensive. 1 year of no emergency fund, and your life is only $300 a month more expensive. And let me point out, going back to the beginning of this conversation about cars, your one decision to not carry a car payment for the rest of your life basically offset that, right? So the key here was, we don't carry around consumer debt. We use financial tools when they're available and as they make sense as part of our larger plan. And we apply for those financial tools before we need them. You don't want to be applying for a HELOC in March of 2020 as the global pandemic is striking and people are flooding the banks trying to get access to this type of thing. You want to do it when banks are lending easily and you don't need it. Because again, it's a line of credit. It's on the sidelines. You don't want to go through this process when everybody's running to get credit and you're at the back of the pack. It's not going to work out as well. So that was our thought there. But there's, Brad, there's different layers to this conversation, right? We've talked about the what and the why and a little bit of the how. Going back to Oscar's question, he's now saying, all right, guys, let me get super advanced FI on you. Is there a way to beat the banks at their own game and pay off my mortgage early using HELOC? Fortunately, there's services out there, Brad, that for a very modest fee will give you the secrets to do this.
Oh, Jonathan, you are purposely riling me up here.
I can see you. You're getting angry, right?
Oh man, this harkens back to one of our earliest episodes, the "Don't piss off the accountant" type thing, which we haven't done in about 400 episodes. No, I mean this is kind of a scheme that I've heard of a bunch of times on other podcasts, and I leave shaking my head, wondering how people sucker other people into doing this. Essentially what people are doing is, in some weird way, they're using their HELOC and like a credit card to float their life's expenses and to use all of their additional savings to basically just pay down their mortgage in some sense. But for the low, low cost to learn this scheme,
which is about $3,000 to $5,000, based on what I've seen floated around there, depending on how good the marketing campaign is, right?
Yeah. And, you know, obviously we're not going to go real in depth into this quote unquote strategy. I don't doubt, frankly, that it works. I really don't. Like, I think on some weird level, it actually would work, but I don't think it's any more beneficial than just kind of paying additional principal on your standard mortgage, which you can do for free at any time. You're not locked into anything. You're not floating money on a credit card. You're not doing anything wacky. You can pay off any additional principal you want. Zero to whatever you want, and you can adjust your own amortization schedule. And you can do that, like I said, at any given time. Whereas these schemes that I've seen, like, it's basically, and Jonathan, you use that perfect word, they're marketing. It's just paying somebody $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 for this insider knowledge, right? And to me, it seems like preying on people who just really don't know any better, that you can just pay off your mortgage early on your own mortgage, right? By just paying additional principal. That's like a really, really simple way to do this. Again, like I said, without locking into anything, without paying anybody for some insider knowledge. Like, Jonathan, we always say, like, there's really no insider knowledge ever. Like, I've been an adult following this path to five for about 2 decades now. And like, I'm still waiting for that insider knowledge, because I frankly haven't seen an example of it. I haven't seen an example where I would pay for any insider knowledge. Like, life is pretty simple once you get down to it. Like, I'm always craving simplicity. And from what I've seen, you can be pretty successful just moving towards simplicity as a guiding light.
Yeah. I guess to our audience, I just wouldn't pay anybody anything for it. If you want to research it and try this on your own, there's a great article on Dough Roller. DoughRoller.net. We'll have it linked up. You can just Google, can you really pay off your mortgage early with the HELOC? It's complicated. It's a little gimmicky. It probably will save you a little bit. You'd be better served just by taking Brad's advice and making extra payments when you can. Something simple like, oh, I get paid bi-weekly instead of bi-monthly, and I'm going to end up making an extra 2 payments a year based on this strategy, you know, will save you probably more money than you half-heartedly executing this tactic. But I'll read you just a quick snippet from this article. And thankfully for all of us, they titled it the Cliff Notes version. Basically, we need to have positive cash flow. So our monthly expense needs to be better than our income. Well, we want to have that anyway. So I guess you're the target audience for that, right? We are not paycheck to paycheck. On certain months, we're going to put our entire paycheck to the mortgage. And then in order for this tactic to work, you're going to need a credit card, something that's going to give you that grace period. Most credit cards give you a 30 to 45 day grace period. This is why Brad and I, when we're talking about travel rewards and using credit cards responsibly, we're always talking about how you're going to pay off the balance on time and in full. Because when you pay off your balance on your credit card on time and in full, you pay 0% interest, as opposed to, let me make the minimum payment at an estimated interest rate of 12 to 35%. No. Pay it on time and in full. So the grace period is, you're basically using a combination of the HELOC plus the grace period on the credit card. On the months when you're putting your entire paycheck to the mortgage, you put the rest of your expenses on the credit card. You're going to add a HELOC to your home. You want to pick a HELOC that has a debit card. At the end of the grace period, you put the entire credit card balance on the HELOC. On your next paycheck, you pay off the HELOC balance instead of your mortgage. On the next paycheck, the one after that, you're going to pay off the HELOC, and that's once again applied to the mortgage. And then you just have to keep doing this over and over and over again. Is that really what you want to do? I mean, yes, it might save you a little bit. Is it worth it? Just pay extra on your mortgage. And if you want to get an extra, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 a year in free travel, do travel rewards. It's super simple. That's super simple. That's why we talk about travel rewards and we don't talk about gaming the HELOC. You're not going to beat your bank and you're going to screw it up somehow, and they're going to make it back on fees. It's just not worth it. Just pay extra on your mortgage or look into travel rewards. Check out episode 9 of our podcast for that. Like, if you want to use credit cards and blow up the game, that's what you want to do. Check out episode 9 of our podcast, or just go to choosefi.com/travel. We have a free course on how to leverage travel rewards credit cards to get thousands of dollars a year in free travel each year. It's totally replicable, totally doable. And compared to this, it's like freaking basic arithmetic. You know, this is nonsense. All right, Brad, I don't know. Soapbox rant. Oh, you know how many emails we're going to get with someone telling us, no, you didn't understand. You didn't explain it the right way. It's actually, there's a secret here, and let me come on your show. And I feel bad for us right now just doing this segment for all the ridiculous pitches we're going to get after this. So just let me save everybody some space. I will just delete the pitch. We don't need to go any deeper on this topic. We're going to leave it alone. Brad, is that too harsh?
No, that sounds about right. And I'm sure, yeah, we are going to get those emails. But as Dove Roller said, the strategy is too complex to be workable. I think that pretty much sums it up. You're paying somebody for this insider knowledge, quote unquote, for a strategy that's too complex to be workable, when you can just pay any amount extra you want on your regular mortgage, an additional principal, and pay off your mortgage early if that's what you want to do, right? And it gives you options. It gives you flexibility. I think that's your best bet personally.
Now, Brad, you're going to be proud of me here. I'm going to close the loop.
Ooh.
Here it is, man. When we talked, we said renters. Oh, this whole episode has nothing for renters. I do not have a HELOC right now. I'm actually listening to myself talk. I'm like, I need to go apply for one. I need to go find a good rate on this. But let me tell you why I don't have one, what I'm doing in lieu of that. That will actually be very pertinent for renters. My line of credit is a margin loan. So I use M1 for my taxable investments. All my savings that I put in outside of my retirement accounts goes into M1 finance. For more information, we have a cool article on this that walks you through why I'm such a big fan. Go to choosefi.com/M1, M as in Mary, 1. And M1 Finance makes it very easy to be a long-term buy and hold investor, to pick up great stocks like the ETF equivalent of VTSAX called VTI. You know, if you are a Paul Merriman fan, if you're a J.L. Collins fan, if you like what we talk about on this show, I'm a long-term buy and hold investor. You're going to love M1. Check that out. But for those of you specifically thinking, how could I get a line of credit as a renter that doesn't have access to a HELOC? The margin loan is an incredible option for you. So here's the deal with M1 Finance. They will let you borrow up to, I want to say it's 30% of your invested assets with them at any particular point in time, with an interest rate that's somewhere in between 2.75 to 3.5%. And you can have that money in your account in a period of minutes. You can pay it back whenever you want. And as my net worth has grown, it's gotten to a point that even if we were to have a 30% drop in the market because I'm 100% stocks, the amount of money that I would still have access to is in far in excess of what I would need to cover 3 months, 6 months, a year of expenses. So that is just the play here for renters. Look into an investment account that will give you access to a margin loan. Again, not that we want you to use this. I don't want to use this. I don't want you to do anything with this. And I'm just saying, in terms of having access to lines of credit, this is an entirely a very viable option. And it actually incentivizes you to save more. You want to get $60,000 line of credit? Well, you probably need to, I just backed myself in a corner. You probably need to save 180, you know, 180,000. Let's get our money invested, long-term buy and hold. Let's watch that money grow. And as our invested assets grow, our line of credit is growing right along with that. It's kind of a fun game to say, oh, well, I have 2 years, you know, 2 years that I could draw down, even if the market goes down. So I think a HELOC's a great thing. And this episode, even though I'm just talking to myself and to you, I'm like, oh yeah, I need to go get a quote, get that locked down. For renters, you have access to this as well, and you should really look into it. And I think several platforms, including Fidelity, offer this. So it's not just M1 Finance, but M1 Finance is who I happen to be with. So, all right. MK, was that a comprehensive look at the question of what is a HELOC, and specifically Oscar's question about, should I do this?
I think so. I think we've got it locked down.
I see what you did there, MK. Nice.
I'm just here for the puns. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and switch gears here. MK, what do you got for us this week? Any wins from the community?
We do have some wins. So this is a win from Alex. So Alex wrote in and said, I wanted to share a win with my Cigna Hospital indemnity insurance win that my wife signed up from work. We're both nurses, offer this additional insurance through our hospital. Wife pays $12 per biweekly paycheck, and benefits rep says any hospital admission pays $1,500 plus $200 per day. My wife was 10 weeks pregnant during our December meeting, and we signed up even though I had my doubts. The lady reassured us we had a guaranteed hospital stay with the birth of our child. Our baby arrived June 20th, healthy, and on July 9th, our check arrived in the mail for $2,100, or 3 days. It made our current $2,300 plus bill easier to swallow. We plan on keeping this insurance when we switch to a HDHP for the HSA, so that's a high deductible health plan for the HSA health savings account, to help just in case, plus unsure if we will have more kids. So $312, so that's 12 times that's being pulled out over their payments, investment turned into $2,100. Not bad. Cheers. So way to go, Alex, and congratulations on your new little one.
Yeah, congratulations, Alex. You guys are navigating the healthcare system like true professionals. Brad, I think with your Fi newsletter, we got some weekly wins this week as well.
Yeah, it's been amazing to see how many people respond to me with their 1% wins, right? Like what action they're taking this week. And yeah, I had Rachel write in. She's basically Fi and she didn't even know it. And this is so great. She said, yesterday was my last official day as an employee for a toxic workplace. Yep, I'm crazy enough to fire during a pandemic at age 49, working on my house, paint and such, and planning my move to the West Coast. My why of Fi is my niece and nephew. They seem like a lot more fun than boring old meetings and being stuck inside every day. Thank you for explaining what I could do with all the money I'd been saving. I was fire and I didn't even know it. I had no idea how much agency I had, but wasn't using. I mean, Jonathan, that's chill inducing, right? Those last two lines. I was fire and I didn't know it. I had no idea how much agency I had, but wasn't using. Nice. And that's Fi, right?
That's amazing. That's amazing. You know what? It sounds like she probably has a HELOC.
That's fine.
They just keep
Rachel,
rolling.
Huge congratulations.
Yeah, huge congratulations. And just, I wanted to let everybody know, just remind you, when we read your response to a Fi Weekly newsletter, right along with that, we are giving away a copy of any one of the books from Choose to Fi Publishing. So we have Choose to Fi, which, by the way, Rachel, doesn't sound like you need, but maybe for nieces and nephews. We have The Simple Startup, which is a workbook for young entrepreneurs to help them start building their business, their idea. The Golden Albatross, which is really breaks down how to evaluate your pension, worth it versus worth it. And we have our newest entry, just an incredible book offering here, Raising Your Money Savvy Family for Financial Independence. So we have a couple more wins that we're going to mention, but I just wanted to set the bar, set the expectation. If you hear your response to the Fi Weekly, your 1% win on the show, that means we have selected you as well for one of these books. We want to give it to you either for yourself or share it with a friend or family member. It's our gift to you and our way of saying thank you for being a part of this community. If you want to get these Fi Weekly newsletters and have the chance to share with us and with Brad, with the community, your wins, just go to chooseify.com/start. There's an easy subscribe button right there and you will get these prompts once a week from Brad, a personal note from Brad, just letting you know what's going on in the community and a chance to share your win. chooseify.com/start. Brad, do you have any more wins for us today?
Yeah, Jonathan, the other winner of the book today is from Brian and Deb. So Brian wrote in, my wife and I are both nurses. And we maxed out our 401ks this week just before we ended our travel contract. We stretch our contributions out to take full advantage of our company's 4% and fully vested match. By stretching it out to the very last week, we were able to add $7,600 of free company match to our investments. On October 23rd, we are officially Fi, though we are staying PRN and working occasionally at a hospital to keep up our skills as a hedge against sequence of return risk through this volatile time. What a cool win, and congrats on another Fi Weekly respondent getting to Fi. That's amazing.
This is a community moving towards financial independence. This is happening. This is not just us three on this call. There are hundreds of thousands, millions of people on this path. And when you check in with us twice a week, you're choosing to be a part of it. And you're saying, yep, me too. I'm doing this. It's important. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose Fi Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.